when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good morning. Good afternoon and good evening to all you people out there listening to this radio show, especially all of our dear Blood River Radio family. We're even going to welcome the Memphis Flyer in tonight in just a few minutes. Those poor perverted freaks, we're going to recognize them. You know, we're supposed to love everybody. But anyway, people, this is May the 15th in the year of our Lord and Savior, 2021. And we always say here that there's no name under the sun in which man can be saved other than Jesus Christ. And it is the year 2021 under our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. People, as you know the drill, we're getting ready to say a little prayer here. And if you will, bow your heads because we're going to say the prayer like we always do here at Blood River Radio before every show. So bow your heads. Almighty Father God, O Lord of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Enoch, the God of Eddie Miller, the God of Blood River Radio, the God of Political Cesspool, the God of Liberty News Radio, please stand with us in these hard times because we are being attacked on every front, O Lord. Some people say that we're under judgment. If we are, so be it. But Lord, no matter how bad it gets, we here at Blood River Radio, we are going to serve you. Eddie Miller, Bombardier, Blood River Radio, Gene, all our people, we're going to serve the Lord no matter how hard it gets, just like all of our great saints in the past did. So, Lord, if you will, please look not upon what we deserve. Do not give us what we deserve, but, Lord, give us your grace. Forgive us for our sins. Let us, everything we do here, let us do it in your name, Lord, and let us always fight evil. Let the last breath in our body, O Lord, be used to fighting this Luciferian, bushel-thick, Zionist evil that hates our guts. Ask all this in Jesus' name, amen. Thank you so much, people. Listen, I'd like to start off thanking all of our great donors. You know, I was going to go to Florida, then I wasn't going to go. Now I guess I'm not going to be able to get out of it because we've had donors to send in some money to help me go to Florida. I can tell you flat out, the Blood River Radio is a very poor radio station. Donations are coming in pretty good. They really are. We've got our airtime in pretty good shape. But what we wanted to do here, we wanted to go to Pensacola, Florida. That's the first week of June. That'll be from June, let me see, the sailors are going to be coming in the 2nd on Wednesday. They're going to be there from June the 2nd. Through June the 6th, but I won't have to stay there that long. Won't be able to because it's just too expensive. But we're going to try to go in there a couple of days, and we want to broadcast. We want to meet all the survivors from the United States Ship Liberty in person. They've invited me down there. I wanted Gene to go. Gene has other duties he just cannot get away from, and that would be dynamite because they all know Gene. Gene's an old Marine, you know. And you know how Marines and sailors, they might fight like cats and dogs, but I tell you what, when the rubber hits the road, when it hits the fan, those guys stick together. So anyway, I've got to try to go down there, and maybe if we can get a little spot with True News, if we could, that'd be great. Maybe get us a little bit of free advertising. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But anyway, I would like to thank some of the people. Alan of Florida sent in a great donation, and he sent it. He says, Dear Mr. Miller, I heard you say that you need funds for your upcoming trip to Pensacola. I hope that this helps. Also, the never-ending friend, the rock-solid friends, Pam and Dennis in Virginia, they sent us a donation to help go to Florida, too. So we're about a third of the way there. If any of you people have any extra money, who has extra money? If you can send it to us, it's going to be, it's just not going to be a luxury trip. I'll spend the whole time there meeting the sailors, getting them on the air. We're going to try to broadcast. I was just telling Gene before we went to the break, before we came on the air, that we're going to try to do 7 or 8 hours of broadcasting up to, like we did up there a couple of years ago when we were up at Montgomery Bell. Anyway, so, yeah, like I said, Alan from Florida sent us a great donation. He certainly did. And we also had Bigfoot in Tennessee. He sent some more German money from the 1922, 1923, some of them actually in World War II. And he also sent some stamps from German stamps with a German swastika, some of them with Adolf Hitler's picture. I wouldn't take love nor money for those things. They're in my safe right now. And also the National Alliance, our buddies at the National Alliance, they didn't get to send any donations this week, but they have before. They sent us a lot of good literature. And also a couple of announcements. Miss Bethany Bushman. Boy, she went from a little scrawny kid. She is a beautiful, beautiful young woman now, young lady. She sent us a picture and an invitation to her high school graduation. That's Sam Bushman's daughter. She's graduating. We sent her a little gift last night, and much as I could afford. Also, one last announcement. Matt the Mole. You all know Matt the Mole. We went and called him another mole. He got him a female mole. They got married a couple of weeks ago. I talked to him last night. They're going to come on for a segment next week for a small segment to talk about how wonderful it is, this wedding bliss and stuff. Well, he's gonna come on. It was the wedding from hell. I'll let him tell you about that. Also, I don't know if Sam's gonna call in. Sam's may try to call in for a short segment this hour to tell about this new thing he's got going on out there, some county out there. I think it's in Nevada. They've declared their independence from the United States of America. So we'll find out how that. Plus, Sam's been thumping the nose of the FBI out there. I told him he better back off because they're nothing to play with. Well, anyway, folks, that's it for that. Here's what we're going to do tonight. Here's a quick outline. Gene Andrews is going to come in. He's going to kind of go over what all wars have in common. And we're just going to, if you know what it is, it's Jewish money. Going all the way from Napoleon and Wellington all the way through to Dow Days, World War I, World War II, the American Civil War. He's going to talk about that. When Gene gets that summed up, we're going to bring in Jim Rizzoli. He's going to come in, and Gene and Jim are going to kind of continue the show. I will bring them in and out of the breaks, and Gene is loaded for bear. Jim is a walking encyclopedia, as is Gene. Hope I don't get those names mixed up. Anyway, now we're going to bring in, boy, I tell you, I hope I'm not too flustered tonight. But anyway, now we're going to bring in Mr. Gene Andrews. And anybody in the Western Hemisphere that's ever listened to Blood River Radio or TPC, you know exactly who Gene Andrews is. How you doing tonight, my brother Gene?
I'm doing great, Eddie. Always good talking to you and all the family we have on Blood River Radio.
I tell you what, it's you pull my bacon out of the fire a lot of times, man. I tell you what, Gene, you have a lot of people love you and respect you, and for good reasons.
You said you
too,
weren't going to mention that on the air. We're not going to talk about that bacon pulling thing that night at the motel. Don't do that.
Oh, that's right. Oh, before I go, I almost forgot, Gene. A thing came out. Rich, he's always thumping our nose, man.
We always talk too much. Gives me a hard time.
He always tells me you're talking too much. You're not talking enough. You're too loud. You're not loud enough. But anyway, he sent us a thing. I call it the fag rag. We have a paper here in Memphis, Tennessee called the Memphis Flyer. So they have me and you and the Blood River Radio folks. We are now number one on their hate watch. We're the most hated SOBs in Shelby County. You know, our buddy James, I guess he's lost a lot. He's not quite as hated as much. They took his name down off the commode and put ours there, I guess. But anyway, he's still there. They still hate him. I guess they just hate us more. But anyway, I think there's enough hate to go around, and imagine why.
No, this is not the first time I've been a target of some kind of slanderous attack. Why do they deem us a hate group or hate people? What is their reason behind that? Or did they even say? Most of the time, they don't even say. If you disagree with them, then you're anti-Semitic, you're racist, you're homophobe, you're xenophobe, da 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 yada yada yada, and all down the list. But they never give you a reason why. It's just if you disagree with them, then you go on their hate list. And the main thing they do, they never say why, because they would trip over the facts. And they never want facts to be entered into any of these debates. So they just don't like what you're saying. They never say why. They just automatically paint you with this big broad brush as anti-Semitic, racist, you know, whatever the word of the month is, the word of the month club, whatever it is. And they never say why.
Well, I tell you, not long ago, just about a couple of weeks ago, they were bitching and complaining because the Tennessee State Legislature would not allocate money for transgender children, and the Tennessee State Legislature will not approve children, 6 and 7 year old boys, being taken away from their parents and having their testicles cut out and having, you know, hormones injected, because these children they don't want to be a man. Maybe they want to be a girl, even when they're only 6 years old. So that's just horrible, Gene. If you don't approve a little boy having his little testicles cut out and being injected with all these kind of hormones and stuff, that's what they define. They actually think they are that perverted. They're just a bunch of perverted freaks.
It's the what the United States is today. Perversion is normal, and now normal is classified as being perverted, and, you know, against all these different pressure groups.
Well, you know, before we go to the break, James has said that, texting, he said the Memphis area had more hate groups than any part of Tennessee last year, according to a new study by the Southern Poverty Law Center. People will go back. We're coming right back to Gene, and in a minute we're going to bring in Jim in a few minutes. Hold on to your seats.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for coming back, joining us in this clip, and we're going to go right back. Gene and I were talking about this, the fag rag, the Memphis Flyer. You know what? I'm going to do them. I'm going to throw the gauntlet down right there, and we're going to leave them, because you know what? They're really not worth talking about. You know, the only people that really reads their stuff are these perverted freaks. They really are. They're just a bunch of Satan-worshipping, demon-infested, perverted freaks. And I hope those sorry dogs are listening right now, because you know what? I can't stand those people. I really can't. You know what? They're not, you know what they are? They're like dog crap on my feet. They're like, you know what they are? They're like a running sore on the butt of humanity, of decent humanity. That's what they are, a cancerous cyst. That's all they are. But I'll do them like I did my Jewish buddy about a couple weeks ago. I'll invite them. They can come on this show anytime. Anytime they want to, and they can debate. They can debate the issue if they want to come on and get slaughtered. But you know what? They don't have the courage to do that. They're so used to people just humbling down and begging, oh, please, please, don't forgive me. I didn't mean to be a homophobe. I didn't mean to be a racist. I hate myself. I promise you, I'll hate myself. I'll hate my parents. I'll hate my grandparents. I'll hate my children. I'll hate all white people. You know, I'll just kill myself. I'll sell my great grandchildren. I'll sell them into slavery so I can buy me some Haitian black kids. That's all I'm going to say about that. Anyway, if you have anything to add to that, Gene, you go ahead, fella. And we're going.
Hard to top that one, Eddie. Hard to top that.
I heard you
mention the Southern Pervert Law Center, and that's another honor to be on their list. They hate everybody that's white, Christian, Southern, anything like that. So if you get on the bad side of the Southern Pervert Law Center, that's another star that you're doing something right. So. That's the biggest hate group in this country today, and they con these liberals out of millions and millions of dollars that they think they're really helping the minorities, and that stuff gets pocketed and put in bank accounts, offshore bank accounts, and they've got caught on a lot of shenanigans that bunch out of Montgomery has pulled. So, a lot of these so-called civil rights groups are just nothing but a sham and shakedown artists. That's all they do. That's how they survive. So
we bees there. They got us listed as hate mongers, Gene. So you know what?
Oh, okay.
I'm going to double down. What I told the Memphis Flyer, that goes double for those. Sorry, I won't say what on the air.
like that movie Jeremiah Johnson and the Mountain Man, where his Robert Redford's playing that Mountain Man. The other old Mountain Man told him, says, "Injuns say a tribe's greatness is known by its enemies. Jeremiah, you got a lot of enemies, Jeremiah."
So, I'll tell you what,
if you're known by your enemies, you're doing very well then.
I'll tell you what, we got some good people backing us up, though. So everything I said about them, I'm going to double down. You know, and one last thing before I go, before I leave that subject, about 5 or 6 years ago, we had you call it the LBGP, they got the fags and lesbos down there on Cooper in Midtown. I went down there one time and knocked on the door, did it kind of halfway on a dare, and I was on the fire, on fire Christian then. I said, I'm going to come over here to evangelize with these freaks. But anyway, I hope they're listening. But anyway, I knocked on the door. Some dude came to the door. He was eating a Wendy's hamburger, and he had some chili in his office. And he said, can I help you? I said, no, I don't. You can't help me, but I think I can help you. And so I went to, I was going to evangelize to him. It was kind of a dare. My son-in-law told me there's no way I do. Anyway, I went back there, and he said he'd give me 5 minutes, but I was there for over an hour. And, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. Like I said, I was hot. I was real hot churchy then. I said, if you will give me access to your people on Wednesday night, let me talk to your people, especially your young people. I'll help you with your clothing. They have this clothing closet for the kids, and they had this food thing. I said, I'll get the church kind of help in on that, chip in. But he wouldn't let me do it. He said, no, you know, I'm afraid it would offend them. But anyway, so.
Well, that's the worst crime in America today. That's worse than being a rapist or a child molester or whatever. If you offend somebody, that's just the end of the road. You might as well hang it up right there. So you can't offend people today. That's worse than murder, arson, anything like that.
It sure damn sure is. But it sure is. But I ain't scared of them though, Gene. Well, anyway, we'll leave those that doormat. That, you know, like I said, I look upon them like I do a cancerous cyst on the butt of humanity, or like a cyst of anal. You know, dogs get anal cysts where they have their anal glands. And a lot of times, because I used to work with a veterinarian, a lot of times you have to express an anal glands in a dog, and it's the stinkiest crap you've ever seen. The veterinarian would always, he'd show me how to tell whether the dog's anal glands were infected. And when you express that stuff, it is, if you think a skunk stinks bad, you ought to smell, a skunk smells like, you know, Paris perfume. That's kind of like these people down in Midtown.
Well, that's
what they kind
of. That's not the theme of the program tonight, I hope, is it?
Hey, I guess I better let off of them. They're liable to accuse me of being a hater, Gene. Anyway, Gene, thing, like I told everybody, you were the expert on the Civil War. Just go ahead and take off like we talked about before the break. Before we came on.
What we were talking about is this was just one more war that was motivated by money. And every war has been since way back when Ugog hit Magog over the head with a dinosaur bone out in front of the cave. money equates to power, and power equates to money. And it was the same thing that happened during the War for Southern Independence. The Southern states were paying a disproportionate amount of the federal budget. The federal budget in 1860 was $102 million. Now, you laugh at that today because they blow that off just at lunchtime in D.C. today. But that was a lot of money back then. And out of that 102, the southern states were paying $78 million because of taxes on agricultural products and tariffs on imports coming into the South. So we were paying for the federal government and getting very little in return from the federal government. And plus, we were under constant attack by newspaper editorials, by abolitionists, which were sort of the nut groups of the 1800s, and even had terrorists sent down here to kill us, like John Brown and his gang of thugs were killing whites and going to arm the blacks in an uprising to slaughter the whites in the South. And the thing about it was, you can say, okay, all right, he was a nut, his followers were nuts. But when they were caught and jailed there in Virginia, it was in Harper's Ferry, which at that time was not West Virginia, it was part of Virginia, some of them escaped and got back across the Ohio River into Ohio, and they wouldn't extradite them. And they made heroes out of Brown and his followers that were hanged for sedition. I think some of the New England poets were talking about the gallows will be as glorious as the cross and that sort of thing. So Southerners looked at it and said, we're in a situation with a bunch of nutcases. We're going to get out of here. And we had the constitutional right to do that because the Constitution in Article 10 said that all those powers that are not delegated to the federal government are reserved to the states or to the people. And even in West Point, they taught up through 1861 from Rawls' book that secession was legal. So United States Army officers in their instruction at West Point, we're taught that secession was legal. So when the seven southern states left, many of the people in the north said, good riddance. We don't want them around anymore anyway. And then all of a sudden it dawned on them, there goes the golden goose. There goes the money. And Lincoln said that the southern states could leave. They could keep their slaves, which was never an issue to us, but it was to the north and the propagandists today. They could leave, they could keep the slaves, but they still had to pay, but they would have to pay their taxes to the United States government. Now, I don't know what country in the world would want to pay taxes to a foreign country to just keep them off their back, I guess. That has been done, extortion. But the southern states said, no thanks, we're just leaving anyway. And then Lincoln even said that he needed to start a war and he needed to maneuver the South into firing the first shot to declare war against the southern states and stop their formation of a new independent country. The money that came in to back that war came through the banking houses in New York, and what you had already mentioned, the Rothschilds, and that was a lot of the financing for the United States Army's war effort against the South. That's where they got the money for that.
Yep. I brought up Napoleon and Wellington earlier. They predated the Civil War. I heard about 30 years, something like that. You know, what happened? A lot of our people might not know, but this is a quick aside. Rothschild, Baron von Amschau Rothschild, he had his own intelligence service, and he had people watching the battle between Napoleon and Wellington. People, I hear the music. I'll just make a quick statement when we come back, and then we'll go right back to Gene. Be right back. Hold on, people. We'll bring in Jim pretty soon.
Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Tear gas and water cannons have been deployed by riot police in Paris against protesters that are demonstrating in support of the Palestinians. Paris has a ban on social gathering. Some demonstrations in other French cities were peaceful. Other marches were held in London, Berlin, and the Netherlands following a week of intense fighting between Israel and the Palestinians. Some of the outrage directed at Israel follows the destruction of a high-rise building in Gaza City. One of them housed the offices of international media companies, including the Associated Press and Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is calling the bombings a clear act to stop journalists from reporting on the conflict. Also targeted, according to the Israeli military, the home of a top Hamas leader. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn, and I'm in the best shape of my life. I love working out hard every day, but I turned 60 this year, and working out can cause some serious aches and pains. I was commiserating with my buddy Jay Schrader, the Super Bowl champion and former Raiders quarterback, about the challenges of staying in great shape for anyone over age 50. Jay said I had to try SonsOfLibertyCBD.com, and it would heal my body, mind, and soul. He was right. No more aches and pains. I feel like $1 million. Finding quality CBD, not easy, but Sons of Liberty CBD, highest quality CBD I've ever seen. CBD is not pot. It won't get you high. It's 100% legal. It's 100% American made. CBD is mainstream and it works. For my listeners, SonsOfLibertyCBD.com is offering a discount of 15% off every product if you use the code WAR15 at checkout. Even better, you can combine this discount with your subscription discount for 25% off. Please support veteran-owned, service-disabled, small business, Sons of Liberty, CBD.com. Just say WAR15 to get 25% off.
White House COVID Response Coordinator Andy Slavitt said the decision on Thursday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to ease mask mandates under certain conditions for people who are fully vaccinated has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with the science, the number of cases and deaths of COVID-19.
We've had a 30% drop in the last week or so. Secondly, there is evidence that the vaccines work at preventing the spread now, which many people suspected, but they now have some good data on.
He said they didn't find out until late on Wednesday that the CDC was going to announce the change. Also, the TSA and CDC have come out with a joint statement. They want to remind those who are traveling by plane, bus, train, or any other type of public transportation that you're still required to wear a mask, even if you've been vaccinated. According to the TSA website, people must wear a mask across all transportation networks through September 13th. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, well, I guess we're going to get off the, we put our sword down for a minute. At least we picked up our duller sword. Hey, guess what? We're going to switch topics a little bit. You know, I'm really unorthodox. We're bringing Jim Roselli in now, and he's going to just mesh perfectly with what Gene was talking about. We're bringing Jim Roselli in. He's going to mesh perfectly with what Gene was talking about. So how are you doing tonight, Jim? You know, you were on about a week ago. How are you doing tonight, fella?
I'm doing just fine. Yeah, enjoying the conversation so far. I'm with the South. You got to understand, a lot of Southern people think that we Northerners aren't, some of us don't care about the South. But we care more about the South than we care about the North. Okay, just to let you guys know, we're for you. But sometimes I get a lot of crap from people down south that think that's Northerners don't care. But we fight for you. But there's not much we can do up here because everybody's nuts. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they just don't care.
We appreciate our Northern allies. And during the war, there were several generals in the Confederate Army. O.F. Straw was from Ohio. John Pemberton from Pennsylvania. The governor of New York, Governor Seymour, tried to get the state of New York to secede from the Union, not to join the Confederacy, but to just get away from Abraham Lincoln. And the worst riot, some of the worst, well, the worst riot in the history of this country were the New York City draft riots in the summer of 1863 when the draft came along and the rich people could pay $300 and hire a substitute to take their place in the draft. But the poor people, $300 might as well have been $3 million. They had no way of getting out of that. And when they started announcing the names that were being drafted in New York City, they went after the draft offices, the newspapers, the high-dollar districts in New York, and this went on for almost 3 weeks, that they took over the police stations, the armories, and the island of Manhattan was cut off. And the draft riots in New York were one of the costliest battles that was fought during the American Civil War. Their estimates anywhere from 10 to 20,000 were killed in that, and there's no way of knowing because so many of them were poor people. And they had to bring New York regiments back to New York City about a week after they fought in the Battle of Gettysburg. And then they turned the troops on the protesters, rioters in New York City and just shot them down in the streets.
Right.
They had no mercy against them.
Wasn't the movie The Gangs of New York?
Gangs of New York, exactly.
That last part of that movie.
That was very accurate on and what they portrayed there.
Right.
So,
right.
No, we have a lot of sympathy for our friends that are trapped north of the Mason-Dixon line. So don't think we're against you. Just because y'all talk funny up there, don't think we're against you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I hear you. No, but right. I just actually did a video on slavery myself because everybody, they always go to slavery. The war was fought about slavery. I'm saying slavery had nothing to do with it. It was just a small part of this situation. They used that slavery as an excuse. I mean, who was going to pick the cotton? You needed people to pick cotton in the fields. This is what happened. You had black people that were down there that were living on the farms. That was their job, okay? They lived on the farm. They were taken care of. They were given a place to live. What really gets me about this is what people don't understand what happened after the war. After the war, when the slaves were freed, okay, they went out and they were causing a lot of problems down south and eventually ended up coming up north too. But this is as far as I understand it anyway. And this is one of the reasons why the Ku Klux Klan came about, because they saw that these blacks were raising hell everywhere, robbing people and hurting people, and they had to do something about it because the government, the northern government, wouldn't do anything about it. And so the towns and the people had to take it upon themselves to protect themselves, and people don't understand that end of it either. And this is all part of it, you know?
Jim, you're absolutely right. That is correct. And it wasn't just the Klan. There were vigilante groups that sprang up all over the South to try to protect the people because at that time, Southerners couldn't vote. The U.S. Congress passed the Franchise Act, and white Southerners were not allowed to vote. So the only people who could vote were the carpetbaggers that were down here or members of the Reconstruction government or these illiterate blacks that were just herded into the polling places and told who to vote for. So white Southerners had no say-so in who the sheriff, the tax assessor, anybody in their local government system was. And so vigilante, like you said, the people were being attacked, especially the women, and so they formed vigilante groups. In South Carolina, it was the Red Shirts. In Texas and Louisiana, it was the Knights of the White Camellia. In southern Middle Tennessee and northern Alabama, the Ku Klux Klan, which was not started as a political organization, it was just basically a soldiers club originally. And then when things turned so bad during the Reconstruction government, it went from that to a political organization. So southern Middle Tennessee and northern Alabama was the Klan. You're absolutely right. You've been studying your history.
Oh, yeah.
And that just proves that you must be a terrible person because you're talking about factual information.
Yeah. Well, it got so bad. Another thing people don't understand is Angola Prison. That's where Angola Prison came from. They had to make a prison for the blacks because it got so bad. And people don't understand that about Angola Prison. You know, Angola Prison, all full of blacks. Yeah, well, why do you think the blacks were there?
Yeah.
They had to do it because it got so bad. Now, I'm not saying that it could have got couldn't have got out of hand, and some people might have went a little bit too far with this, but the point is it was a problem. And it was just like up where I live in Massachusetts. We have a lot of illegal immigrants now, and they're just running around like crazy, doing whatever they want, and nobody's doing anything about it. We got the same situation up here, but of course, you know, we don't have the Klan up here. But I wish we did, but we don't have the Klan up here to make a scene. Well, it's too bad. I wish we did.
There was an interesting book written by Stanley Horn. Now, this is back when they wrote factual history. This is back in the 1940s. And it was called The Invisible Empire, and it was a factual history about the Klan. And one thing he had in there was the report of the United States Congressional Committee that was formed to investigate the Klan. And the minority report said basically what you've been talking about and what we've been talking about. They said if the government hadn't been so corrupt, there would have never been a Ku Klux Klan, which... You know, it wouldn't have been a political organization. It would still have been there. And the point he was making and that they made in that was that bad government creates bad citizens. So when the government doesn't do its job, groups of citizens are going to take over and take the law into their own hands or try to defend themselves. That's just human nature. You're not going to stand by and see your family members attacked and murdered or your home burned down and taken away from you. You're going to try to fight to protect your possessions and especially fight to protect your family. Nobody's going to stand. No real person is going to stand by and let that happen.
Right.
So they can't understand that. So,
one thing they don't understand is that they thought they were doing the blacks a favor by freeing them. But that it was, you know what it's like? It's like releasing a little child to go on his own, to think he can live on his own. These people didn't know how to live on their own. They lived on a farm all their lives. Okay, they you know did their job and they didn't have any money. So here they are now out and about. What are they gonna do? They're gonna just do what they can do to survive, which was bad things. You know, robbing people, hurting people.
Well, they and also you put that situation into the South after the war. A country that had been destroyed and decimated by a war that was a war against civilians, where civilian homes were burned. And you understand burning the depot and arsenals and foundries and things like that could make war materials. But when you go by and just destroy personal property and devastate these farms, so much of the farmland was destroyed in the South. When the Federal Army came through, they would take manure out of the barns and stables and dump it in the wells, which poisoned the water. Right. You get cholera from drinking tainted water. They would take salt from the smokehouses and plow it into the field, and it takes generations to get that salt out of the ground. You can't grow crops there. And even they smashed and destroyed the farm implements, plows and rakes and reapers and things like that. So now you had this huge population of approximately 3 million people that not only did they believe that the federal government was going to take care of them and they didn't have to work, but if they tried to go back to the farms where they were working, there was nothing there. It had been destroyed. And that's why so many Southerners moved west after the war, or they established a colony in Brazil to grow cotton down there. The Brazilian government was giving them land in Brazil if they could come down there and get cotton farming started. They had so much of the South was abandoned after the war because there was nothing left there to subsist on or to try to make a living on.
But it was all pre-planned because think about it. The carpetbaggers came in right after it. See, it was all planned out.
Guys, we got to go to a quick break. And hey, Jim, when we come back, I wish you would take off more and tell us more about these carpetbaggers. That's a big point, big sore point in the South. People, hold on to your seats. We got a really riveting conversation going on here between two great guys. Be right back.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I tell you what, I'm really enjoying this show. For one thing, I don't have to worry about my voice going up and down. I'm going to have to get a new focus right. But we got the problem solved. God moves mysterious ways. We have Mr. Gene Andrews and Mr. Jim Rizzoli on the night, and they are tearing it up, buddy. So if you will, Jim, go back and expand upon the carpetbagger, because a lot of people have no clue about when you say carpetbagger. They don't know what you're talking about. Let's go ahead and educate us on that, Jim.
Well, first of all, people have to understand, like you said in the beginning of this whole discussion with the program, all wars are bank of wars. So when a war happens, they already have it planned out how they're going to divide up everything. So when the South was completely ruined, then you send in your carpetbaggers, or mostly Jews, okay? That's who they are, because they're people with money who go in because everything's devastated, everything's ruined. They can buy the land for cheap, pennies on the dollar, and now they're able to set up and establish their own businesses and everything else to make themselves rich. And that's what they were. I mean, as simple as that. They did the same thing in Germany at the end of the war with Germany. You know, the Jews went in and completely destroyed that country and took all the property from the Jews, from the Germans, and did the same thing. But this, every war, this is how it always happens. You have the banking system. They fund both sides of a war. Okay, and then they just send their people in. They're making money on both ends. They don't care which end they make the money on. They're going to make it on both ends. Okay, because you're going to have weapons on one end, weapons on another end. They send them all in. Everybody gets their money, but who makes out? The bankers. The bankers and all the minions who comes after them to go in to sweep up everything after everything else is done. And this is what the carpetbaggers were. And I guess they tell me that they had, some of them had bags that looked like carpet bags. That's why they call them carpet bags. They had a bag that actually looked like a carpet. It was just the type of bag they used to carry, I guess. But anyway, that's my understanding of it.
Yeah, Jim's perfectly correct on that. That was a very cheap piece of luggage. It was just made out of old carpet material. And that was about the cheapest thing you could get to carry your clothes and whatever essentials you needed. And so it really identified these people. It wasn't a leather suitcase or a trunk or anything like that. It was just a bag like we would have an athletic bag today that you'd take your shoes and shorts and T-shirt and things to the gym. But it was about that size, but made out of this carpet material. And so that's where the name carpetbagger came from. It's a name that was very synonymous with, just as you mentioned, these people that were coming down here to steal whatever they could and pick up land for just pennies on the dollar. That's where Hilton Head Island came from, that the Southerners were thrown off of there, and that land was taken by the rich families in New York, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, and that's why they were able to build these huge palatial estates on Hilton Head, because they got the land for practically nothing. And they hired Southern laborers that could work for just pennies because they were starving to death. They'd take any job they could get to do the manual labor. But you're talking about the bankers. A friend of ours, buddy in Arkansas, sent me a quote that I've got taped to my bookcase right here above my desk. It says, "Those who profit from war will never suffer and die in it. And those who suffer and die in war will never profit from it." And if that's not the truth, I don't know what is.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, isn't it true, I mean, you can maybe help me on this one. Arlington Cemetery, wasn't that owned by Robert E. Lee? So
yeah,
they ended up probably stealing his land from him.
Yeah, that was Arlington Plantation. And when he married Mary Custis, Mr. Custis owned that land. Lee didn't have any money, and that's why he went into the Army. Because his father died and had squandered the family wealth at Stratford Hall in Virginia, where he was born. And he at one time, he and his mother, they were just living with relatives in Alexandria, Virginia. And the only way he could get an education is to apply to and get accepted to the United States Military Academy at West Point, which he did, had an outstanding career. And then I believe he was still a lieutenant, married Mary Custis. And then when her father died, in those days, the husband inherited the land and the family assets. So he took over Arlington Plantation and running that. And then when the war came along and Virginia seceded, he, as a Virginian, threw his lot in with his native state. They left Arlington House, whatever family possessions they could carry, and went to Richmond to rent a house in Richmond. He never came back there. And that land was taken by the federal government, and they hated Lee's. Well, before he left, he was given an offer by Lincoln and the War Department to command all of the federal armies. At that time, he was a colonel in the United States Army. And Winfield Scott said, said that this is the best officer in the United States Army. If you want to end this insurrection by the southern states, you put Lee in command of the federal army, and it's going to be over in about 6 weeks. But Lee, being a Virginian, he said he could never draw his sword against his family. And so he had to resign from the United States Army and go to Richmond and offer his services to the state of Virginia first. And then Virginia was accepted into the Confederate States of America. But they hated Lee so much for doing that, that once they took over that home there at Arlington, they put graves up as close to that house as they possibly could, so no one would ever want to live in that house again. So it was strictly for spite is the reason that Arlington Cemetery is where it is today, because it was a slap in the face to the Lee and the Lee family, because they had decided to stay with Virginia. So that's why Arlington Cemetery is where it is today.
Yeah, I read about that. Let me ask you something. Can you folks down there still have your Southern flags, your Confederate flags, or they go crazy on you down there?
Well, it flies from the Nathan Bedford Forrest home. It flies from the Confederate Memorial Park at Winstead Hill on the battlefield at Franklin. That's private property. And, we have, unfortunately, we have a lot of people that have moved in from other parts, and they rant and rave about it. But a lot of us fly it. The more they stomp and steam and get upset about it, the more flags we fly. So don't ever come down to the South and tell a Southerner he can't do something. Because he will dig his heels in and do just the opposite. We stood on the wall at the Alamo. We stood at Chalmette at New Orleans. We've stood on the field at Shiloh and Murfreesboro and Chickamauga. So that's not a really good idea to tell Southerners they have to throw away their history and they can't have their flag. So,
right.
But thank you for bringing that up.
But what's going on down there? What really incenses me is that they're letting them tear down these memorials. I mean, and I just can't understand how they can do this. I mean, we don't have a lot of Southern memorials up here. But you have them down there.
But it's not just the Southern memorials. Well, you have to look at this, Jim. Our cities in Memphis, Richmond, Atlanta, Birmingham. They're no different from Detroit, Chicago, San Francisco, Portland, anything like that. They're run by mushy-headed liberal Democrats.
Right.
And they kowtow to the low IQ minorities that swarm into the cities. And so they, of course, they're going to do whatever these minorities tell them to do, because those are the only people that are stupid enough to vote for liberal Democrats. So that's how they get in power. And so that's why you had Monument Avenue in Richmond with the statues of Lee and Jeb Stuart and Thomas Jackson and Matthew Murray and all of the Confederates on Monument Avenue. I don't know if you've ever been there or seen those, but those were beautiful, beautiful equestrian statues. Yeah. Some of the greatest sculptures in the whole world were on Monument Avenue. They're all gone. And we have a coward that's a governor in Tennessee, Slick Willie Lee, and he ran as a conservative Republican. Oh, I'm going to protect the monuments. I'm going to protect our Tennessee history. He wasn't in office 6 weeks until he started crawfishing and backpedaling to get a sculpture of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest taken out of the state capitol in Nashville. And so he pulled a sneaky deal so he wouldn't get accused of it. He appointed a bunch of his flunkies to be on the Capitol Commission, and surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter, they all voted to get rid of the statue. Now, this weasel can say, oh, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. The Capitol Commission did. So, you know, you've got a bunch of worthless, lying, dirtbag politicians, and that's why all of these are disappearing. But it's happening all over the country. I mean, they're tearing down statues of George Washington. I know in New York they were after a statue of Teddy Roosevelt. So it's the cancel culture. And it's hitting everywhere in this country. It's a destruction of our history and our heritage to be replaced with socialism and communism. That's it.
You know what they're doing up here? They're probably doing it where you are too. But they're changing the names of schools.
I mean,
can you imagine that? Like, we have a school up here. It's named Wilson School after President Wilson. Wilson's tied in with slavery, so we're going to change the name. They want to name it after a Brazilian. It's like, are you out of your minds? These people, I'm just sitting back watching this laughing, because it's like, I'm not racist. I have nothing against blacks. I just think that the blacks are like the Jews. Okay, the blacks and the Jews, see, what happened with the blacks and the Jews is this, okay? The Jews latched on to the blacks because they could use them, and they're using the blacks. And now the blacks are becoming like Jews. Now we want reparations like the Jews are getting their money. We want to be paid for something that happened to us. Oh, wow, whoopee-doo. You know, slavery, which has nothing to do with you. This term African-American, I'm saying to myself, really, African-American? How many of you people can be traced back to Africa? Africa. I mean, you're so far removed from Africa, it's not even funny. I mean, look, I'm Italian, and I'm only, three generations away from Italy, But I don't call myself Italian. I don't say I'm Italian-American. I say I'm an American. I don't care about, hyphenation of words here, using all these words. I'm an American. I'm not African-American. I'm an American. And these blacks think they have some special thing. But, of course, this is all happening because of the Jews. Because the Jews want to keep, they want to keep us separate. This is what they want to do. They want to keep blacks and whites fighting each other so that we don't bother them. That's what's going on.
Yeah,
just
divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer. Yeah.
And the slavery issue and the reparations—it's a crutch. It's a thing to hang on to and blame that for everything. When I was in the Marine Corps, we had an expression: "If you can't hack it, get a racket." And this is their racket. That's what.
Yes,
they,
it is.
They can't
You're absolutely
hack it, so.
Right. That's
so
a good
that's
point.
What they're going to use. Now, before we use up all of our time. Back for the break, I want you to tell me about some of the work you've done about Ernst Sundell and David Irving. That's good. Eddie Quinn, can we get that after the break?
You better believe it. You know what? We'll have plenty of time to do that. And there's a few points I would like y'all to hit that y'all mentioned here for just a few minutes, if you don't mind, and we'll go do exactly what you said, Gene. People, hang on to this riveting conversation. I'm just having a ball, man. I'm telling you, this is great. We'll be right back. We're transitioning into the second hour. So get you some coffee and come back in a few minutes.